today? Happy birthday. How many years old are you today? 18, huh? I was just teasing. Just teasing. Okay, happy birthday. Hare Krishna. So, in honor of Vignesh's birthday, we'll speak about Rupa Goswami. And we'll begin describing Rupa Goswami by describing his position in relation to Lord Chaitanya and the principal followers, amongst them the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. So in the middle are the two brothers, Sanatan and Rupa Goswami, and their nephew, Jiva Goswami, and three others, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. And Prabhupada loved to speak about their renunciation. Chaktva turnamashesha mandala patikshanim sadat turchavat. They were in an aristocratic position and rejected it all to come live in Vrindavan wearing one cloth, living under a tree, and eating once a day maybe. The comforts of opulent life was not at all what they aspired for. They had it and let go of it. But they also gave a treasure to the world in the form of transcendental writings. So those of you that know this verse from Sad Goswami Astakam, you can sing it along with me. Nana shastra vichara naika nipuno sadharma sangstapako lokanam hitakarino tribhuvane manyo sharanyakaro radha krishna padara vinda bhajana Nandena Mataliko Bhande Rupa Sanatana Raguyago Sri Jiva Gopalago Bhande Rupa Sanatana Raguyago Sri Jiva Gopalago. And the translation: in honoring the six Goswamis, I offer my respectful obeisances unto each of the six, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus, they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. So they took it upon themselves to serve the Vaishnavas by studying all the revealed scriptures in light of the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and gleaning the essence of them, presented the essence of them for the benefit of all human beings. Here's how a tree, a painting of a Chaitanya tree from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya is the main trunk and main branches, Advaita Acharya and Lord Nityananda and Gadadhar and Shivas, but also following the six Goswamis, and from these branches of the Chaitanya tree, so many sub-branches and sub-branches of those sub-branches, and so many fruits, and the fruits were received by the whole world. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also watered the root of the tree and helped distributing the fruits of love of God. So abundantly the fruits of love of God were made available, and in the taste of those fruits was the love of Krishna in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, and this right-hand painting also illustrates. Although he was in the mood of a devotee of Krishna, he's actually Krishna in the mood of a devotee of Krishna, specifically in the mood of Srimati Radharani. And so that's the mood of the love that Lord Chaitanya made available. And the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and in turn the teachings of Rupa Goswami, are to make that love available. Here's one way in which Srila Prabhupada writes about, or this is actually Krishnadas Kaviraj, his Prabhupada's translation, glorifying Rupa Goswami. Before the creation of this cosmic manifestation, the Lord enlightened the heart of Lord Brahma with the details of the creation and manifested the Vedic knowledge in exactly the same way. The Lord, being anxious to revive the Vrindavan pastimes of Lord Krishna, impregnated the heart of Rupa Goswami with spiritual potency. By this potency, Srila Rupa Goswami could revive the activities of Krishna in Vrindavan, activities almost lost to memory. In this way, he spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world. So not just love of Krishna, but love of Krishna in the mood of Vrindavan. And he displayed it himself, the love of Krishna in the mood of Vrindavan. Here's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's description of this gift of the study of the scriptures done by Rupa Goswami and others. Srila Rupa Goswami collected the essence of all the instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and offered it as a gift to the genuine sadhakas. So we're offering the gift of Rupa Goswami to all the genuine sadhakas and those that are wish to be genuine sadhakas too. This is from his commentary on Upadeshamrita. More, these are verses by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught Srila Rupa Goswami the ultimate limit of the truth about Lord Krishna, the truth about devotional service, and the truth about the transcendental mellows culminating in conjugal love between Radha and Krishna. Finally, he told Rupa Goswami about the ultimate conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught Rupa Goswami all the conclusions he had heard from Ramananda Roy and duly empowered him so that he could understand them. How about that? Not just here's the teachings, but I hereby empower you to understand everything, the highest truths. Whew. By entering the heart of Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu empowered him to ascertain properly the conclusions of all truths. He made him an experienced devotee whose decisions correctly agreed with the verdict of the disciplic succession. Thus, Srila Rupa Goswami was personally empowered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is Mahaprabhu instructing Rupa Goswami at the Shashvamedha Ghat for some time, and after not just teaching him but empowering him to fully understand the conclusive truths of all these amazing subject matters, then he told him to write books. Indeed, Srila Rupa Goswami, whose dear friend was Swarup Damodar, was the exact replica of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was very, very dear to the Lord. Being the embodiment of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstatic love, Rupa Goswami was naturally very beautiful. He very carefully followed the principles enunciated by the Lord, and he was a competent person to explain properly the pastimes of Lord Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expanded his mercy to Srila Rupa Goswami just so he could render service by writing transcendental literatures. So here's a painting of Rupa and Sanatan under one of their favorite trees. Their minds absorbed in Radha and Krishna and their transcendental pastimes, and describing them in suitable language so that fools like us could hear and properly understand. When we perform ceremonial functions, like on, I believe it's Monday, we're going to have a Srimad Bhagavatam installation. So we'll recite the Mangalacharana prayers. And the very first one is to Rupa Goswami. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. And its translation is, when will Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, who has established within this material world the mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya, give me shelter under his lotus feet? In Gauragona Desh Deepika, this is a book written by Kavi Karnapur in which he describes who's who in Chaitanya Leela, who are they in Krishna's Leela. So he identifies that Rupa Goswami is Sri Rupa Manjari. And here's what it describes in that purport. Who is Rupa Goswami? In Goloka Vrindavan, Sri Mati Radharani is lovingly served by 8 principal gopis, of whom the Lita Sakhi is her dearest friend. You could sit over here. Just here and just. These intimate maidservants of Srimati Radhika are assisted by 8 main manjaris. So each of the principal sakis, 8 main gopis, they have little girl manjaris that assist each of them. And Sri Rupa Manjari is the leader of those, and she serves Lalita. They please the sweet divine couple by carrying messages, preparing tasty beverages, stringing fragrant flower garlands, offering betel nuts, decorating the kunjas, fanning, etc. That's who Rupa Goswami is. And as he did in Krishna's Leela, he intimately served Lord Chaitanya in Gaura Leela. Here's a painting of a pastime that also indicates or directly Lord Chaitanya declares that he gave empowerment in his full mercy to Rupa Goswami. It's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that during kirtan before Lord Jagannath, sometimes Lord Chaitanya would sing a particular song again and again, at least a refrain, a stanza from a song. And depending upon one's culture, appeared to be a mundane love song. He loves her, woo woo woo. Or, you know, the Bollywood style, that one, or Romeo and Juliet, or West Side Story, or, you know, Papa Doopa Doop, you know, he loves her, and she's feeling woo, 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 you know, like, you know, one of those kind of things. Just like very love song. And no one, he just kept singing it over and over again. So Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami said that Rupa Goswami could understand the mind of Lord Chaitanya. And so later, he wrote a companion verse to complement that verse that's very explicit about the mood of Radha, feeling separation from Krishna, searching for Krishna. Where is that beloved son of Nanda Maharaj? Is he now on the bank of the Jamuna? Is he beneath the Vatasi tree? Is he playing on the 5th note with his flute? Just pining, feeling separation from Krishna. And he wrote that on a leaf. And then he stuck the leaf in the thatched roof of his hut, and he went to do his midday bathing and midday duties. And Lord Chaitanya came because Rupa and Sanatan, along with Haridas Thakur, were so humble that they wouldn't enter the temple. They felt themselves unfit to enter the Jagannath temple. So they stayed at Siddha Bakul with Haridas. So Lord Chaitanya went to see them, and Rupa Goswami was not there. And he saw that leaf, and he read the verse, and he was astonished. And so Rupa Goswami came back, and he read the verse aloud in front of Rupa Goswami. And later he went and he was back in his residence in Gambira, and he asked Surup Damodar, how did he know my mind? How is it possible? By the way, we discussed this in our class yesterday morning in Chicago. It's Prabhupada specifically advised, do not make the mistake of predicating the mind of the spiritual master, for one may very easily make big offense. But Rupa Goswami wasn't guessing. He knew. He knew the mood of Lord Chaitanya. So Surup Damodar said, there's only one conclusion. For Rupa Goswami to know your inner feelings, he must have received the fullness of your mercy. Otherwise, it's not possible. Deductive logic. And Lord Chaitanya then spoke this verse, yes, it's true. He instructed him, as that previous painting showed, at Dashashvamedha Ghat, I thereupon also bestowed upon him my transcendental potency. Now you should give him instructions, in particular, instruct him in transcendental mellows. So in addition to Lord Chaitanya imparting transcendental knowledge and the realization of everything that he taught him, he similarly empowered Surup Damodar and Ramananda Roy to impart the same teachings in further depth. So it's one thing to study. It's another thing to have realization. It's another thing to fully understand everything that you heard. Fully realized. That's Rupa Goswami. Twice, on two occasions, Lord Chaitanya confirmed this very, 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 very special mercy that he gave to Rupa Goswami. For those reasons, Rupa Goswami, in our line of disciplic succession, out of all the awesome members of Lord Chaitanya's associates, Rupa Goswami is the next in line in disciplic succession. Even his elder brother, Sanatan Goswami, was, because he was elder, Rupa took the position of receiving his elder brother as his spiritual master. And this was just his devotional mood. But in other words, the author of the book that we're going to spend some time studying the verses of, he's not just a literary person. He's a very especially empowered person. Here's Raghunath Das Goswami writing about Rupa Goswami. Adhidhanas trinam dantayar idam yache punak punak srimad rupa padam hoja duli syam janma janmani. And the translation, taking grass between my teeth, I pray repeatedly that I may become a speck of dust at Sri Rupa Goswami's lotus feet, birth after birth. From Mukta Charita. And I'll go quickly, just because I haven't even started with the verses, the first text of Nectar of Instruction. In the pranam mantra that we say for Bhakti Vinod Thakur, it includes also appreciation of his being a strict follower of Rupa Nuga Varayate. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Srila Sachit Ananda Bhakti Vinod, who is the transcendental energy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is a strict follower of the Goswamis, headed by Srila Rupa Goswami. And two of the pranam mantras that we offer to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, similarly, Madhuryo Jvala Premadya Sri Rupa Nuga Bhakti Da Sri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, the personified energy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, who delivers devotional service enriched with conjugal love of Sri Radha and Krishna, coming exactly in the line of revelation of Srila Rupa Goswami. Everyone's talking about Rupa Goswami. There's a reason why. He's very, very special in our disciplic line. Namaste Gauravani Sri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupanuga Virudhapa Apasiddhanta Dvantaharine. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are the personified teachings of Lord Chaitanya. You are the deliverer of the fallen souls. You do not tolerate any statement against the teachings of devotional service enunciated by Srila Rupa Goswami. He sets our standard. And there's an intimate relationship between Srila Prabhupada and Srila Rupa Goswami, specifically through the Radha Damodar Temple. In the courtyard of the Radha Damodar Temple is the Bhajan Kutir and the Samadhi of Srila Rupa Goswami. Here's something that Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Devotion. The place of Srila Rupa Goswami's bhajan, execution of devotional service, is commemorated still. There are two different tomb-like structures of the Radha Krishna Temple in the Radha Damodar Temple. One structure is called this place of bhajan. In the other, his body is entombed. Beyond this very tomb, I have placed my bhajan, but since 1965, I've been away. The place, however, is being taken care of by my disciples. So while Prabhupada was there, he described in one confidential discussion, it wasn't a public lecture, but he revealed that when he was doing his translation work of Srimad Bhagavatam, preparing for coming to the Western countries under the order of Bhaktisiddhanta, looking out the window, practically, when you go there to do Vrindavan and the Radha Damodar Temple and Prabhupada's rooms, you'll see that little desk, and you'll see a window, and opening the window, you see the courtyard of the Samadhi and Bhajan Kutir Rupa Goswami. So Prabhupada describes, Rupa Goswami appeared to him and spoke and said, Maharaj, don't worry about anything. Go ahead and travel to the West and preach. Just preach the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the chanting of Hare Krishna. You'll be successful. I guarantee, because I will be right with you all the time. Pretty intimate, huh? Here's another description. This painting is in the courtyard. Behind the Radha Damodar Temple, there used to be, they've renovated, it's not the same anymore, but there used to be an elevated passageway so people could circumambulate, and beneath that was a shady, cool place, because in Vrindavan it gets too hot, a place where the Goswamis would sit, like you see the painting, and they would discuss, because Radha Damodar Temple was central to where the other Goswamis had their temples, and from time to time they would come together like this and discuss Krishna Katha. So, the writings of the Goswamis, Jiva Goswami kept a library, but some of their writings, original texts, were kept in a Vrindavan Research Institute. When you go from the Krishna Balaram Temple, go out the front gate and make a left-hand turn going to that place called Loy Bazaar. So on the left as you're going down, there's the Vrindavan Research Institute, where inside they have originals of the Goswami writings. Here's the person in charge, Gopal Chandra Ghosh, describing to one of Prabhupada's disciples an exchange he had with Prabhupada. about the same incident of Rupa Goswami coming. He writes, Srila Prabhupada said he had received a visit last night in the courtyard by Srila Rupa Goswami's samadhi. He saw some very beautiful persons. One was wearing only a kopin and was chanting a large tulsi mala around his neck. His eyes were very large, like lotus flowers, and he was extremely effulgent. Also coming there was another personality, dressed similarly, but older and taller, very kindly to him. Behind them was a much younger sadhu, whose beauty and sweetness were captivating. Swami Maharaj told me they were Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Sanatan Goswami, and their nephew, Srila Jiva Goswami. He then said, they spoke to him and gave him mercy and guidance for his writing and for his future preaching. I tried to ask more, but this is all he would tell me. So our Hare Krishna movement is not only based on the teachings and the realizations of Rupa Goswami, but great inspiration and support from Rupa Goswami to Srila Prabhupada to do his work. In the preface of Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada writes that the Krishna consciousness movement is conducted under the supervision of Srila Rupa Goswami. And he spoke, we are called Rupa Anuga. Anuga means following, going, following the footsteps of Rupa Goswami. So as the Rupa Goswami is following his predecessor, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we have to follow our predecessor. Then we will be successful. Weird color comes because the connection isn't good. Just where it's connected to on both sides. You know, the computer side also. Okay. Something happened. What happened? Okay, so there's a little chart. Rupa indicates Rupa Goswami. Anuga means follower. And we should be Rupa Anugas. Here's Prabhupada's description. A follower of the Krishna consciousness movement should become a perfect Goswami. So fasten your seatbelts, everybody. We're supposed to become followers of Rupa Goswami. And now we'll cover, that's part one. That's who is the author of this amazing book. I'll mention one other thing. Repeatedly, Prabhupada made it clear how much he wanted, he committed, dedicated he was to completing the 12 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam translating. But he took time out to translate other things, like the whole of Chaitanya Charitamrita and Krishna book. But two books of Rupa Goswami he translated. One was a summary study, in the title Nectar Devotion, and the other was word for word, like he did everything else, translation of this Upadesh Amrita. So this is the first verse where it speaks of controlling six urges. And here's the verse. Vacho Vegam Manasakrodha Vegam Jiva Vegam Udarapasta Vegam Etan Vegan Yovishaheta Dhira Sarvam api mam prithivim sasishyat. It's speaking of the urges and the necessity to control the urges, and one who is successful in doing so, sarvam api mam prithivim sasishyat, can make disciples or can be a spiritual master for the whole world. Here's the translation. A sober person, dhira, who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world. When you... those who are not yet initiated, when you, before initiation, there's a 13-question exam. This is the answer to one of the questions, or this is one of the answers to one of the questions. What's the qualification of a spiritual master? So this is a scriptural answer to that question, text 1 of Nectar of Instruction. These six urges, one can tolerate or control. So here's there's a sequence our acharyas describe from like steps going up to the house of bhakti, the temple of bhakti. Some child made this little drawing. The genitals, the belly, the tongue, Prabhupada would often say these are in a straight line. And so great emphasis is given by Rupa Goswami on controlling the tongue, which then helps control the belly and then in turn helps control the genital. Then the other function of the tongue is speaking, eating and speaking, and then anger and mana, the pushings of the mind. We've been discussing in the Chicago temple, the morning classes have been Narada Muni's discussions with King Prajinibari, and he's describing the effect that the mind has on the body. The fact is that the seat of happiness and distress is the mind, not the body. But if one can control these six, the verse says, one attains the house of bhakti. One becomes qualified spiritually. So very important to control these six. Now, if out of the whole first verse, there's a particularly important operative word, and that's vishaheta, to tolerate. Very similar to the language found in chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita. Tongues to tiksha svabharata. Matra sparshas to kontaya sitoshna sukha dukha da agama payondhityas. Tongues to tiksha svabharata. One should tolerate. That means you withdraw attention or energy from duality and place attention or consciousness in that which is eternal. Sat. Withdraw consciousness from asat and place consciousness in sat. And that which is going on in the asat realm, minimally, you tolerate. Vishaheta dhira. So here's some dictionary definitions of what tolerate means. To allow the existence, presence, practice, or act. Whoops. Yeah. Of something, without prohibition or hindrance, permit. To endure without repugnance, to put up with, like, for example, I can't tolerate laziness. I can tolerate laziness, but not incompetence. I don't know about that one, but that's what the dictionary says. So there's a difference, not just a subtle difference, but a difference between tolerance that's in the form of repression and tolerance in the form of suppression. Which one is not tolerance? Repression is rejection from consciousness of painful or disagreeable ideas, memories, feelings, or impulses. That's not exactly what tolerance means. Suppression, conscious inhibition of an impulse. That's what it means. This vishaheta. There's an impulse. You recognize the impulse, and consciously, you don't act on it. You tolerate it. You withdraw consciousness from it. Consciously, you withdraw consciousness from it and place your consciousness elsewhere. We had this elaborate discussion in our Bhagavatam class, not exactly on the word vishaheta or tolerance, but what do you do when, you know, something, something. Somebody was speaking about the tendency to fault find, or they to predicate the mind of other people and, you know, see into their motives, and they just they're it's compulsive for them. They just overtime do that. This is one of the temple brahmacharis saying, you know, I know it's not good, but it just like goes on, so what do I do? So consciously it's like, you know, put a control rod in that turbocharger. Don't go there, and go into another position. Conscious, take that energy and redirect that energy. So, conscious inhibition of an impulse, not repression, but consciously redirecting attention. Here's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita about this. One of the things he says, a person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. So the vegams can be there, or the desires can be there, and you tolerate them. You don't place value in them. Somebody sent something to me just today, and it was I didn't save it. I deleted it, but it was something like, it was a Cherokee Indian thing of his teaching his son. There's two wolves fighting inside, and one is, you know, goodness, and the other is, you know, evil, and they're at war with each other. And the son said to the father, "Well, who wins?" And the father's answer was, whichever one you feed. So, neglect, or don't invest consciousness in these desires and urges and that which leads down. You invest, place consciousness, give attention to that which leads to elevation, principles of the soul, to humble devotional service that are pleasing to Krishna, that Krishna's happiness should be fulfilled. And that's how you correct the problem. It's how you remain peaceful. Not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. So this is about, the first verse has a great deal to do with the mind. And how does the mind become conquered and become one's best friend, or the other way around? Suggestions by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur are ignoring the mind or engaging the mind in the spiritual master's order. Here's a verse from the fifth canto Bhagavatam. This uncontrolled mind is the greatest enemy of the living entity. If one neglects it, or gives it a chance, it will grow more and more powerful and will become victorious. Although it is not factual, it is very strong. It covers the constitutional position of the soul. O King, please try to conquer this mind by the weapon of service to the lotus feet of the spiritual master and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Do this with great care. So here's a little chart called the cycle of suffering. And this is taken from Nectar of Devotion in part. There's these four stages. Prarabdha karma, that's down here. And then before karma, this is ones that are presently being manifested. Bad karma that's happening now. And before that is aparabdha, not yet manifest. And sinful action leads to a sinful reaction that's not yet manifest and then manifests. Or it may not directly manifest, it's just indicating some tendency or a seed of a desire. And all of this, the root of it is ignorance. So, where tolerance comes in is right over here. There's a sinful desire. And before there's an action, before you act on it, you recognize this is inappropriate. This came from some previous... This is exactly what the teaching of Narada to King Pujinibari is. It came from some previous body that's not even around anymore, but because of that action in the previous body, some impression is stored in the mind, and so now there's a desire that's stored in the heart, and now tick-tock, time fructifies it, and now comes out this thought or desire. Now, so it's an urge. What do? I don't pay attention to it. I tolerate it. I withdraw consciousness from there, recognizing what it is. It's temporary, illusory, and it's not me. That requires transcendental knowledge and requires some strength. And the strength comes from the instruction of Scripture and the spiritual master to do so. There's a very nice teaching. There's many very nice teachings. One of them is, Prabhupada said, whenever the spiritual master gives some instruction, within the instruction itself is the power to carry out the instruction. That's pretty nice, huh? Should I say it again? Whenever the spiritual master gives some instruction, within the instruction is the power to carry out the instruction. Or similarly, Krishna gives some instruction. Control of the mind. Oh my God, give me another one. Some other instruction, please. One that I can do. Well, no, you're supposed to do that one. Yeah, well, give me an easier one.
Fight.
Huh?
Fight.
So, here's Bhaktivinoda Thakur commenting from his commentary on Nectar of Instruction on this verse. The devotees are intent on yukta vairagya, and thus they remain aloof from dry renunciation. Therefore, the regulation to abandon all contact with the sense objects does not pertain to them. What does that mean? If you're an impersonalist, for those who are an impersonalist, they're refraining from sense objects. Their urges are there. Their refraining is completely abstaining. For the devotee, it's not completely abstaining. It's rather engaging in service to Krishna. This is another Rupa Goswami's teaching. On the Sunday lecture, this is what I spoke about. There's two verses from Nectar Devotion by Rupa Goswami in which he says what false renunciation is, or incomplete, and what complete renunciation is. So, in short, complete renunciation is seeing that which is in relation to Krishna, and that's everything, is in relation to Krishna, and then engaging that thing, that something, in service to Krishna. And that's complete renunciation. Incomplete renunciation is things have relationship with Krishna and you reject them. But the reality is it's not ours to reject. It's Krishna's. So that which is Krishna's can be, should be engaged in service to Krishna. So that the yukta vairagya principle is the strength. It's engaging in service to Krishna under the guidance and instruction of the spiritual master. That's strength, spiritual strength, that enables us to overcome desires and urges. And it works. It uplifts the consciousness of the soul above that lower platform. Here's a verse from Padma Purana that expresses similar idea as Rupa Goswami's idea. So I'm not going to read the whole thing, I'll just read the bottom. Thus agitated, the cultivation of Shuddha Bhakti is not possible in order to make the hearts of those who are pursuing the path of bhajan, intent on bhakti. Sri Rupa Goswami has composed this verse first. This is taken from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. He has a whole series of verses. There's the Padaprana verse, and then he's giving his purport. There are pushings. And one should refrain from those pushings. They agitate the mind. Thus agitated, pure devotional service isn't possible. So the starting point of Rupa Goswami's first verse is how to come to the stage of pure devotional service. That's where he begins. Cute illustration. Prabhupada speaks in the very beginning of his purport that there are different grades or qualities of intelligence. One, the first class intelligence is we can understand just by hearing. That's a brahmana. Just by hearing they can understand. But some persons don't have that capacity, so they hear and then they see and then they can understand. And then some persons, they hear and they see and they experience and then they can understand. And then there are others that they hear and they see and they experience and they still don't understand. That's the fourth class. So, ideal, at least through training, is to, by regulation, uplifting of the quality into the quality of the mode of goodness, one can understand just by hearing. He speaks, Prabhupada speaks about in his purport, a question that arises in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, discussion between Maharaj Parikshit and Shukadeva Goswami. Paraphrasing, Maharaj Parikshit asks, why do people undergo atonement if they cannot control their senses? He gives the example of the elephant. Just like the elephant takes a nice bath and then afterwards rolls in the sand or takes dust from the sand, from the bank and throws that all over his body. Kunjara Sochara. And Shukadeva Goswami's answer is a sinful activity cannot be counteracted by a pious activity. Real atonement is awakening of our dormant Krishna consciousness. So, that's the starting verse. It's not explicit, it's implicit. One can overcome those urges if one is situated in Krishna consciousness. The converse, if one isn't situated in Krishna consciousness, those urges are going to prevail. One can be better at it or poorer at it, but they're going to prevail to a greater or lesser degree. The way to overcome them completely is for the past activities, which is the source of where the desires arise, and some impression is there stored in the mind. It's exactly what Nara is explaining to King Prajinivari. The solution is not atonement. The solution is awakening of Krishna consciousness. So these are two verses from that section of the Bhagavatam where Shukadeva Goswami is receiving this instruction. Kechit kevalya bhaktyavasa deva parayana. Only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. My dear King, if a sinful person engages in the service of a bona fide devotee of the Lord and thus learns how to dedicate his life unto the lotus feet of Krishna, he can be completely purified. One cannot be purified merely by undergoing austerity, penance, brahmacharya, and the other methods of atonement I have previously described. So, the starting point of Nectar of Instruction is pure devotional service. And to describe what that pure devotional service is, he describes the capacity to overcome desires or urges born of one's previous activity. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes the following in his Bhagavad Gita commentary for 421. The best kind of intelligence I can have is intelligence used in the service of Krishna. Intelligence is defined as fixed, dhira, when he is intent upon my spiritual master's instructions, when it, intelligence, is fixed upon my spiritual master's instructions. This is the Vyavasayatmika Bhuti verse. Very important verse. Such as, and he lists, whether I'm happy or distressed, whether the material world remains or is destroyed, I do not care. There is no loss for me. I simply must carry out the orders of my spiritual master. Fixedness upon his orders is determined intelligence and devotional service. And only by being fixed on his orders can such determined intelligence prosper. And by determined intelligence or proper intelligence, the mind is controlled. And if one doesn't have that proper intelligence, the mind controls. And the pushings prevail. And the behaviors are embarrassing. So, go back to the spiritual position. Attain the spiritual position through instruction, adhering to instructions at all cost. Whatever my deficiencies are and weaknesses are and shortcomings are and whatever, that all that stuff. Let me not budge an inch from the instructions. In within that instruction, within fulfilling that, there is spiritual potency to overcome my material conditioning. Prabhupada gives an example about following hygiene processes, you don't become sick. Similarly, by a methodical life or the spiritual kind of tapasya, one can be elevated to Krishna consciousness, not just the material kind of tapasya, but you know the austerity of not acting whimsically, not acting capriciously, not just going where the senses dictate. You go where Krishna dictates. You know, the Krishna's dictation is understood through the spiritual master, and we do that. And then Krishna consciousness awakens. One's that the wet wood becomes dry wood and the dry wood ignites. That's our process. So these very colorful presentations here. By practicing austerity and celibacy, following that principle, controlling the mind and senses by regulation, by giving up one's possessions and charity, by being avowedly truthful. These are items Bhaktivinoda Thakur presents in his commentary. They help gradually. They're on the material side, but they help that make wet wood dry wood. But that's the gradual process. Then there's the direct process. Associate with pure devotees. Follow the principles given by them. Like, you know, the elevator and the staircase. This is the elevator. Sadhu Sangha. And following their instructions. And specifically, take the recommendations of Srila Rupa Goswami to heart. They're very scientifically, very clearly, very simply presented. And it's the map of how to get out of the maze of material existence and restore our original spiritual existence, the end. Haribol. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So let's go back to the first slide. Can you hit the... Any comments? There we go. Make it full screen if you would. Any comments? Questions? Yes.
It's a very strong inspiration to strengthen one's relationship with the spiritual master through your class, especially Rupa Goswami's example and the teachings. But my question is, how how does one enter more deeply, even deeply, in understanding the mood of the spiritual master, to have that sort of intimacy that's so attractive?
How do you have a relationship? I was hearing Srila Prabhupada just today on a recording speaking about the limited association he had with Bhaktisiddhanta. He said it several times. He said, maximum 10 times I was in the physical presence of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Then he said maybe it was fewer than that. Then he went back and said, maximum 10 times. But I never deviated from the instructions of my spiritual master. And, you know, your question specifically was the mood of, but, you know, it's the instructions of. Within the instructions, you'll understand so many things. Just what's the math? Prabhupada left this world in 1977, November. So that's 23 years plus 12, 35 years. 35 years of devotional service without being able to go and physically be with Prabhupada and hear him speak and see him. And how's that possible? By commitment to the person and the instructions of the person within, as you know, as Prabhupada said about himself and in Bhaktisiddhanta, he had full faith and he adhered to the instructions that he received from him. It's commitment to the person, to commitment to the relationship with the person, and that within that means the instructions of the person, that which guides one's life. And you make that just as the 241 purport. It becomes one's life and soul. And then it's not how do you go more deeply. It's it's your life and soul. That's the access to Krishna. That's our teaching. We all know what is something that's superficial, and we know that we don't like it when we see it. And we know what is genuine, and we like it when we see it, and you know, feel it. So just do that. And not the cosmetic one, the real one. The real one, it's not circumstantial. It's not created by or broken by circumstance. As, you know, as the indication of these translations said. Duality doesn't create or impede devotion. Circumstance doesn't create it or destroy it. It's that's our access. Something else? Yes.
Strongest weapons for controlling the mind were ignoring, engaging in Google's orders and associating with pure devotees. 6.5 weeks ago, you gave me instructions, you know, about how to make some advancement concerning my situation, and you said that whenever a spiritual master gives some instruction, he also empowers one to carry out the instruction. And
sounds like something I just said today.
Yes. I had some difficulties over the last 6.5 weeks, mostly coming from my mind about how I was going to accomplish the instruction, when was the instruction going to come to fruition, and I just really struggled in controlling my mind about these. And so the days that I focused on the actual instruction, and associate with pure devotees and ask questions, you know, about, you know, how do I do what Guru asked me to do. I had some of the greatest advancement in attaining the goal. And on the days that I did not, you know, I kind of teeter-tottered, you know, on whether or not I'd be able to do it.
He who hesitates is lost.
Right. So today, I just announced that, you know, I've attained the goal. I achieved the instruction as a teacher in the same.
You see, making a step, that's all.
Yeah. So I'm grateful.
Attaining is one thing. The step is more like it.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So I feel successful in being able to.
One step at a time.
Carry it out.
One step at a time. All right, Bo. Yes.
Can you please elaborate more on repression versus suppression? How to understand it?
It's a language thing. It more important than this word versus that word is the essence or the mood. Repression is just like tuck it under the rug, like it's not there. And the other is you acknowledge that it's there and you consciously don't act on it. You withdraw consciousness from something that's unwanted and place it where it's wanted. Prahlad. Star of the show. Turn it off. Someone else? Prahlad, the kitchen is calling you. Would you like to go for a ride? Flying through the air? Yeah, you better go pick him up. Pick him up. He's not going to just come to you. Your son's getting a kick out of it. Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.